This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 4th of May, 2021. A somewhat more interesting session in some respects yesterday than we've seen in a while. We saw equities not having a very good time of it and falling through a bit lower overnight. And you can see that in the case of the NASDAQ 100, and a lot of the selling was in that space and in some of the more speculative names, getting close to those multi-week lows there, down near 10,700, maybe even slightly below that. And momentum is rolling over. The question is, of course, it's one thing to have momentum rolling over, which it will do anyway if price levels stay flat, but whether it actually punches through. We'd in previous days pointed out the divergent momentum in the S&P 500 as well. I'll let Peter take you through that in a moment, but a bit interesting to see the reaction to the U.S. ISM manufacturing, where we saw the headline dropping to a still very, very strong. Let's make no doubt about it. 60.7 reading is very strong, but it was a considerable drop from the prior number. So it means the improvement is still very strong, but it's happening at a slower pace of improvement than the prior month, which was the highest, by the way, since the early 1980s. So it really is difficult to slice and dice the implications of these diffusion indexes, indices when you're at such high levels. Regardless, the ISM price is paid, and you can see this on slide 3, going to almost the multi-decadal highs. 89.6. There were a couple of prints back in 2008 when oil prices were ramping towards $150 a barrel that were higher. And then if you had to go back to the 70s to get ratings like that previously. So, and just noting as well on that slide, slide 3, the correlation between those two. So if the ISM manufacturing and more importantly, ISM services start to fade, the I will quickly draw towards 50 and the next stimulus check. We'll get to that in a moment. Lots to chew on here. We've got Treasury's finding support despite that ISM prices paid number. So gold finding some support and rallying, silver as well. Treasury's doing the same, and equities not having a good time, especially the most speculative stuff. Take us through, Peter, your impressions, and you've got your great overview, usual overview on slide 4 of the different theme baskets.
Yeah, so yesterday was an interesting session because you had the commodity sector basket up 1%, by far leading the gains. Together a little bit with travel, so there was a positive reopening story there in inflation, very much tied back to that ISM manufacturing report right there. There was a couple of days ago there was a report out on the chemicals industry in the U.S. It's the longest time series we have on, which is a proxy on of industrial production in the U.S. You can see we hit almost 22% year-over-year gain. And you might say, yeah, well, Peter, well, we're coming from a low point last year. Yeah, but if you compare it to the financial crisis, you can actually see how big the rebound is relative to that trough we had compared to the financial crisis. And you have to go back all the way to the U.S. economy coming out of the World War II and the boom years of the 48 and 49 to see anything similar to what we're experiencing in the U.S. right now. As Warren Buffett said on the shareholder meeting, companies right now, from their experience, are accepting any price hikes. And it just tells you that the corporate sector is flush with cash. There is very strong margins across the board, at least among the healthy parts of the corporate sector. And they all accepting without even barking these higher prices. So it drives that inflationary pressures, and it's also driving the very massive rebound we're seeing in earnings. But I'll talk about that later in the podcast. And then on the flip side of that commodity story, which is interesting because in Altea space, the interest rates were not moving a lot yesterday, but at the same time, you had bubble stocks, next-gen medicine, and green transformation, all the interest rate sensitive parts of the equity market were actually selling off pretty heavily yesterday. So to me, that was a sign that the equity market said, okay, it might be that we are in a pause here in the interest rate market, but we are firmly expecting inflation to be higher, margins potentially be under pressure, and those yields will come higher.
Yeah, it is a curious point. The whole point around Treasury's rallying, I guess that the one interpretation, the most pessimistic, would be the concern that while we're seeing very high inflationary pressures now, these stimulus checks, there's no outlook at the moment to another round of this type of stimulus in the U.S. at least, where the most global stimulus is coming from this development, and that on that note, we're already seeing a crack in the likes of the ISM manufacturing. I don't know. What's your take, I'll say, on the Treasury action yesterday? We also had some interesting action in the bunds, but I'll let you talk Treasuries first, where we saw 5-year and 10-year, especially around there, sort of coming in and finding some strong support yesterday.
Yes, John. So basically, the take on 10 years that you had on the bond market right now is that it seems that bond investors are more concerned about unexpected type of tapering from the Federal Reserve. So it's early tapering rather than inflationary fears, because while we see U.S. Treasuries moving sideways around that 1.60% level, the break-even is not rising as much, is not rising fast. So it makes us believe that the big question that bond investors right now have is, okay, now we have this strong inflationary data coming out. What about the job market? Because the Federal Reserve many times has been saying that the real target that they have is full employment. And this week, at the end of this week, we will have job data. And bond investors are wondering, well, if these job data are stronger than expected, we are going to get closer to the Fed target. Will they consider tapering then? And I think that at that point, we will see U.S. Treasury yields resuming their rise. So just quickly, we have put a chart on U.S. Treasury yields on slide 6. And as you can see, the yield has been consolidating between that 1.6% and 1.75% since March until today. And if we see 10 years yield breaking above 1.75%, then the rise to 2% can be quite fast.
Okay, and somewhat related to that, Ulle, with support coming in for the Treasury market, we saw some interesting moves in gold, and I guess especially silver, since silver actually managed to break a bit of resistance there. What's your take on that? I assume that's mostly fixed income linked.
It is indeed, John. And what was interesting yesterday was it was actually silver taking charge of this rally. You can see that here on slide 10. We broke above some previous local resistance, while gold is still holding below 1800. I think the combination of the weaker data we had from the US that you mentioned, at a time where basically, even though nominal yields are holding steady in the US, we're seeing break even moving higher, and we're seeing real yields now touching the lowest level in 10 weeks. So that was probably the trigger that took it higher. But as we've talked on recent podcasts as well, we have yet to reach levels, especially in gold, where longer term short positions, those who have been holding short since the peaks back in August, that they'll start to respond. For that to happen, obviously, we need to take out 1800 and potentially even 1820 before we start to see some short covering. But at least for now, silver is doing the hard work. Gold is yet to follow.
All right, that 1800, just looking at that chart, that 1800 level looks really important for gold. Okay, I'm going to sort of zoom out here and talk a broader theme. We have, and that's, you have been charged further this theme by the Reserve Bank meeting overnight. Recently, we've had the Bank of Canada being the first central bank to actually move in a pretty concrete way among developed market central banks with a tapering of asset purchases. And we're getting further signs of that this is a train that is moving in motion elsewhere as well, because the Reserve Bank upgraded the forecast on the economy, looking at 4.75% growth this year, 3.5% next year, and then said actually explicitly in July whether it will roll forward its yield curve control policy from that April 2024 Australian government bond to the November bond of that year, or keep it in April. In other words, shortening the maturity or the duration of the yield curve control policy, as well talking up whether considering quote-unquote considering future bond purchases once the $100 billion QE program is complete in September. So it's clearly they're inching towards considering tapering and even shortening the horizon of their yield curve control policy. And then if you look on slide 5, we have the one central bank that is actually where we're seeing actually the market getting more aggressive in pricing actual interest rate hikes somewhere out the curve is for the Bank of England, which is up on Thursday. So it'll be interesting to see if this is all confirmed this week, I'll tell you, I mentioned the taper talk from the Fed. It seems the Fed is lagging here. But you can see on slide five that that two-year spread is the black line between Europe and the UK, showing the UK is, yields are higher versus Europe or at the highs of the cycle, whereas euro sterling has consolidated quite a bit. So there'll be a key meeting from the Bank of England for confirming whether or not that is the case. And on that note, Altea, it's not necessarily related to ECB policy rates, but we also saw some interesting moves in European fixed income yesterday. It was actually more interesting for a while there, as we saw the bond yields poking to new cycle highs for this year before being pushed back lower. What's your take on bonds? Are we really going to get something moving here, or are we going to have to wait till the political situation is clearing up later this year?
Well, it really depends, John, and I think that it depends on the movement that we are going to get in the US Treasury yields, in the meaning that after the last ECB meetings, it is very obvious that the ECB is not going to do anything until the German elections. So what is happening is that European sovereigns in general, not only the Bund, are going to remain sensitive to changes in US treasuries, because it's clear that increased purchases under the PEP program didn't help to break that correlation between Bund and US treasuries. So I think we will get to see more of what we have seen yesterday. And yesterday we have seen the 10-year Bund's yields rising to minus 0.16, which was the highest since last March, and the 30-year yields rising to 0.38%, which is the highest level they reached since July 2019. The big trend is for Bund yields to turn positive on the long term. And if they don't turn positive before the German elections, because they are dragged by US treasuries, then they will definitely turn positive with or just after the German elections, because it's becoming clear that in Germany, a new government will be looking at a better European integration and more fiscal spending.
Yeah, it's provided, of course, that big lead or that big, it is a lead actually in the polls by the Greens is sustained. And then just very briefly rounding out that fixed income story, we saw euro yen under pressure after trying to rally towards the highs in the cycle as, again, bond yields were rising towards the highs of the cycle, and then it was beaten back. So I think it's really pivotal to see here. I think yen crosses are very sensitive to yields already. If yields continue to consolidate lower, I would imagine the yen has a lot of catching up to do. You can see on slide eight the latest developments on FX trends. I think one of the more interesting ones is noting all the green on the right on the gold and silver as their momentum is picking up. But of course, we've mentioned that there are some key levels that need to be taken out. let's get back over to, let's round out the commodity story here. You wanted to pull in some talk of uranium today. It's a very interesting area. I think our position long-term is quite clear on the Saxo Strats team. We even had one of our outrageous predictions this year being that alternative energy does not have the density required to shift shift our civilizations off of fossil fuels, and nuclear power is one of the green answers in terms of CO2. Is this thing getting some traction here?
Well, it is because it has had some traction now since November last year. Again, a really key date for many of these commodities when we had the vaccine announcement and we also had the presidential election in the U.S. But what happened over the last week was that we got a Canadian stock called Uranium Participation Corp. They primarily focus on investing in physical uranium. And they stepped in and they made a deal with Sprott, which is a big ETF provider of physical deliverable gold and silver ETFs. And that really set the market on fire, because up until now, the main way to invest into the uranium market has been in ETFs, into buying the underlying companies. But now you can, with this Sprott link up, it's going to be much more of a global availability. So we'll see whether it can catch on. Obviously, we've seen quite a strong rally already, more than 10% in that ETF or that company. So I think the report will be appealing to some that they can invest directly into the uranium. My my slight concern is that this market is starting to become a little bit almost religious, like the Bitcoin or the crypto space. And that means if you are watching some of the uranium guys on Twitter, they are it's becoming quite I'm starting to get a little bit concerned that it's just getting a little bit too OTT, over the top, in terms of their expectations for where this market is going. I believe firmly that we are seeing a very strong future for the sector, but it's basically a decade plus development that we need to watch here, and it's not going to happen overnight. But just from an investment perspective, clearly that's an interesting development.
Very interesting indeed, also because the lead time on this nuclear power is so long. Peter, we need to get back to you because we've got earnings season ongoing, not quite the as furious and fast as it's been last week. But you've also got an interesting slide 12 here. Take us through what's one of your latest scatter plot is taking us through here.
Yeah. So yesterday we launched a new equity theme basket and called Financial Trading, which is basically our attempt to provide some inspirational, but also a list of how to get exposure to the financial trading industry. And it covers 30 stocks across institutional and retail brokerage, exchange and clearing. We also have the Coinbase on the crypto side. There are some financial information companies in there, S&P Global, MSCI, the ones that do the big indices. They make a lot of money if trading and asset management goes up on investment products. We have electronic bond platforms, etc. We also have market makers. I'll come back to that in a few seconds. It's quite an interesting industry, very strong sales and earnings growth rate over the past year, as you can see on this table. And one of the things we're asking, we sort of posing this question in yesterday's introduction to the financial trading theme, was that, you know, we have the 100-year portfolio. Steen have been talking a lot about it. You can find it on the platform, etc. And it's in this one, it's the one where we have 7% exposure to crypto, so as an option on an unpredictable future. And then we also have 5% being long volatility. And long volatility is typically done in either two ways. So either you buy out of the money, put options on the equity market, which then goes up in value if you have a bigger correction, or you get you take a long position in VIX futures. And the one that we have chosen, or Steen has chosen, is the one that is sort of on the mid part of the VIX curve, where the curvature is not as steep as it is in the front end of the curve. And that means that the negative carry, so what it costs you to constantly roll a long position in volatility, that's a little bit less in the mid curve than in the front end of the curve. But nevertheless, using premium on put options and buying long VIX futures typically has this negative carry. Virtue and flow traders, which you can see on this table, and we are on slide 12, by the way, sorry, are the only two listed market makers, purely market makers. You have market making operations, some of the other institutional brokerage firms that we have on the list, but these are the two main ones that are pure plays. And the regression, as you talked about, John, shows you the weekly returns between the S&P 500, it's the x-axis, and then the Virtue on the y-axis. And you see a raw beta, which is very close to zero. And in my article, I also show the share performance. If you take the three large correction in equities in the past 5 years, so in early 2018, late 2018 on the Fed policy mistake and the high interest rate when everyone wanted them to not do so, and then the sell-off in 2020, all of these three occasions, Virtue stock actually went much higher while the market was crashing. And the reason for that is when you have a highly correlated across assets sell-off in the market, it widens the bid offer spreads, and that makes it more profitable for very good market makers to make a lot of money. And that's what's happening. And specifically for flow traders, ETF had a huge dislocation last year, so they increased their bottom line by a factor of 9. So I'm proposing here for investors to potentially look at Virtue Financial and Flow Traders as some potential long volatility component to your portfolio.
That's very interesting. So these would be companies that are actually, well, when there's problems with liquidity, they're actually the ones that can provide the real liquidity that often disappears when these algos, I guess, get taken offline because of shock events that start to trigger trigger flows. Or am I reading that correctly?
Yep. Yes. Exactly. So, so that's the point. You, yeah, they get paid to offer that very, very much needed liquidity when there's this dislocation. So, have a look at those. I think it's a super interesting way to get long volatility exposure because you don't have that negative carry because they have their normal operation that still, you know, cranks out a lot of cash and profits during normal times when you have low inflation.
Right.
And cool. then on slide 13 on the earnings, it's a light day yesterday on Monday. I know we had put in Zoom to report. Apparently that was a misprint from Bloomberg. They're not going to report until a month from now. But today, the key one I will be looking at, obviously Pfizer is interesting because of the vaccine and where are we on that? What's the outlook, et cetera. We have had Infineon Technologies here in Europe in early hours reporting very good earnings, lifting their outlook on sales, just like so many other European companies. But I will be looking at Activision Blizzard. They are reporting today. And as you can see on that small insert here on slide 13, you know, the gaming industry have been probably one of the best performing parts of the equity market over the past 5 years. And Activision Blizzard sits in the middle of that very strong performance. So we'll be looking at that because the big question is, can gaming continue to perform well as people get back to work and don't have so much idle time?
Well, maybe they do if they're on their stimmy checks. They don't have to worry about going to work ever again. Just joking there. One area that was interesting in April, and this is, I guess, Althea, partially on the relief that the Treasury's yield stopped rising in the U.S. Just briefly, I wanted to pull in your slide on slide 9, showing that we just had crazy good performance for the worst or the lowest rated corporate bonds, essentially, for the month. What's the prospects? Take us through that, and what's the prospects? What are the prospects from here?
Well, John, the point I want to make with this slide is that in the bond market, the best performing assets have been TIPS and CCC rated corporate bonds, the lowest rated junk bonds that you can find in the market. And the reason for that, it really bodes well with what we have been saying since the beginning of the year, that with inflation rising and also the risk of the Federal Reserve tapering, you are left only with two options. Protect yourself against inflation through TIPS, or otherwise trying to create a buffer through high-yielding securities in order to protect yourself from higher inflation. And that higher yielding securities, unfortunately, can only be found within the junk bond space. Just an interesting factor, the CCC rated US corporate bonds have been returning a positive return for 13 months. This is the longest period since 1992. So definitely we are seeing strong performance, and my take is that probably we will see more than that if we see yields rising in the US.
Yeah, interesting stuff to me that have central banks completely disintermediated or outlawed the whole credit cycle. It's just incredible. There's certainly no signs of fear when we look at the traditional classic things that would suggest that we're maybe in for a bigger bout of risk off, something like credit spreads. They're actually showing extreme tightness, so no fear there. Let's get to the macro data. I just wanted to pull one thing in here. I know it's been a long podcast, but I think it's an interesting point to make, and it's one we've made before, that all of the U.S. stimulus since the breakout of the pandemic has really aggravated and driven worsening external deficits in the U.S. And you can see that illustrated on slide 14 with the both the headline trade balance in black and the trade balance ex petroleum in blue. And because there's been such a revival of oil production in the U.S. with the advent of shale oil, the headline is hidden how much the underlying sort of basic goods trade balance is really just deteriorated and egregiously so, and been accelerated by the stimulus response to the pandemic. And ironically, at a time when we're talking about America first, and at a time when we're talking about the Biden continuing basically the basic attitude towards limiting America First strategy. So zero signs that these deficits are improving, and I wouldn't expect today's data to show that either. But just briefly on today's data, we have, to me, the most interesting thing as we work into the Asian session, the very early Asian session with New Zealand and their RBNZ financial stability report. Apparently, Governor Orr is ill and will not be attending, and there's a presentation of this report to a parliamentary committee. But do we see any signs from the RBNZ as well of this theme I'm talking about slowly withdrawing support? For now, I think their approach is a bit more macroprudential and concentrated on the housing market after they were basically told by the government to bring housing prices into their mandate. So I think that's the critical thing. Then as we work into later in the week, is the ISM services up tomorrow. That's interesting because the March data at 63.7, excuse me, was the highest ever. And that ever only goes back to the late 90s. And we're expected to actually beat that at 64.2. So again, services are red hot. Do we continue to see this incredible pace of improving further, which is what you need to continue to get these numbers higher still. So, or do we see something similar to what we saw with the manufacturing? I'm suspect that services is lagging at least a couple months behind manufacturing. It's been a long one. We'll cut it off there, and we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.